Welcome to The Allie Effect with Allison Blythe, authentically living life your way. We all contemplate making changes in our lives that would allow us to live more authentically, but it can be hard to take action. Allison is here to educate, equip, and empower you with the tools you need to start authentically living life your way. Get ready to eradicate your limitations and destructive patterns as you take full responsibility for your own happiness. This show is not just talk. It is conversation for profound self-awareness, acceptance, and appreciation, the key elements to stepping into the power as the creator of your very best life. The Allie Effect with Allison Blythe starts now.
Hey, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to The Allie Effect, authentically living life your way with me, Allison Blythe, certified life coach and licensed clinical social worker. You can join me the first and third Thursday of every single month right here on Transformation Talk Radio as we dig deep into this concept of authenticity and cover different topics to help you support walking authentically. So everyone knows this idea of authenticity, and certainly we've heard the word, we've seen the memes, and yet showing up in the world fully as ourselves is actually a lot harder than one would think, especially in today's day and age. So this is my opportunity to share, to help build into you in order to do it authentically, living life your way. So stay with me for the next hour as we talk about authenticity and cover another topic and actually offer tools, tips, and resources to educate, equip, and empower you in authentically living life your way. Today, we're going to be addressing a topic that's actually quite near and dear to my heart and not always a very easy one to talk about. I can feel kind of the energy of it today and just kind of addressing a topic that sometimes people will really, really struggle with. I have done this work for many years, a lot of years, and they keep growing. And over the course of time, probably met with thousands of different people coming face to face with experiences and circumstances that they're all facing and enduring. It's sometimes during their deepest level of trauma that they've ever faced. And sometimes it's just life. You know, they're coming in for different reasons, whether it's parenting or partnership, communication stuff, dealing with mood and stressors. Lots of different reasons why people actually enter my office. And what I have come to know for sure is that we are actually far more alike than most people would ever care to realize. And as different as our circumstances may be, and maybe the outer appearances, most people are just doing the best they can to get by in this world and establish some sense of happiness and well-being for themselves. We can look a lot different on the outside, especially filters and social media and all of these presentation things we do. And yet we all know that life can be hard, really hard sometimes. And just having someone to offer support or encouragement, maybe some perspective and even a challenge and accountability can often be very, very helpful. And that's where I come in. Every day for more than 30 years, I get to show up. I get to show up in the world and in my office to do something that I absolutely love and sit closely with people and often be on the front lines of life with them. Yet there's one experience, one dynamic that has been very consistent for so many of the people that I see that often goes completely undetected. It doesn't matter the color, the age, even the social or financial status that people have has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not people are affected by this issue or not. By now, with as many years of clinical experience as I have, the number of people who've actually taken a seat on my couch, there's a specific dynamic that I have seen in so many of my clients that I can actually begin to detect fairly quickly. There's a distinct pattern, kind of like specific traits and classic characteristics that kind of send my therapeutic spidey senses into high alert. I can start to detect things that don't quite seem right, or I can feel. This is a pattern that will serve as today's foundation for the show. It's to point your awareness to the fact that we have a very different type of epidemic that many in our world are facing. And it's caused so much damage over the years, and it doesn't get nearly the attention or the warning that it really does warrant. Today, to kick off, I actually want to introduce you to several of my clients, not in person. I'm just going to tell you their stories. I think it's Brené Brown who says, it's hard to hate close up. And I get the gift of seeing my clients very, very close up. And I appreciate that. So I want to introduce you first to Larry. His handshake was probably as firm as his head nod. You know, it like kind of left me like, ow. And he was very handsome, very distinguished, highly successful, fit, muscular, really lean. He was not mean. He was lean, with almost like militant-like. He kind of had this appearance and this approach to life. It's just very rigid and strict, and you could sense it as soon as he walked in. He had three kids and a wife, and he was recently coming in because his wife began to mention divorce. They had been married a very long time. He loved her dearly. And she came to him and said, I just can't deal with this anymore. This pressure and these expectations that you have, certainly the lack of warmth and affection had just left the marriage just cold and really on the back burner, because so much of his attention was always on his career, the appearance, the performance of the kids in school and in sports, and even so much focus on how the yard looked. He was rigid and had unrelenting standards for himself and for the people that he loved. And it had completely driven a wedge between he and his wife, and often left his kids anxious and trying to always please and perform for their dad. Everyone was on eggshells all the time, concerned about whether or not he was okay. And these were all things she cared nothing about. She would have rather, you know, built a fire in the backyard or pop popcorn and watched a movie, right? And he did love his family. And he came in very motivated to prevent the deep heartache of divorce. When I started to inquire about his history, which I always do for people who come in, he just began to rattle off family dynamics. He would describe it as fine, totally fine and totally normal. He described his father as just typical. You know, he was a typical dad. He went to work every day, hard worker, good provider is what he would say. And his mom, he described as a faith-filled woman. She would clean, she would cook, she would do everything that was kind of expected for her to do and just make sure everything was just so. He referred to her actually as a very good wife to his dad. He moved quickly. He didn't want to spend any time on creating any context or any background. He wanted to know clearly how to keep his wife from leaving. And I saw his desperation clearly. And it was one of the most interesting things that I started to see. And that is what those spidey senses of mine got activated. It's like, why all this rigidity? Why the perfectionism and the pressure to perform? All those people around him. He was so shut off emotionally and completely unavailable in spite of the love that he had, despite all the love he had. So what's Larry's story, right? Like what's kind of the theme with him? And I wonder, is that rigidity, that pressure, that fear or concern, that drive about what everyone thinks, is that anything that you can relate to? So if you think about Larry kind of on this spectrum, I want to flip the scale and kind of go to someone who came in, and her name is Sally. And Sally was very petite. She was very beautiful, but her meekness entered the room long before she did. You know, she just had this very meek, her shoulders were rounded, her voice was very low. She apologized for things that certainly were not even her fault or her responsibility. And her frailty was incredibly evident. And this sense of self that I talk so much about just didn't exist in Sally. She had been cheated on in every single relationship she had ever been in. As a matter of fact, this was now her third major relationship in her life, and all of them had ended with her partner leaving for another woman. From the time she was a teenager, her very first boyfriend, she was in very destructive relationships, and she blamed things like her weight, her looks, her intelligence, her lack of sex appeal, and sadly even resorted to the fact that she believed she was a poor cook, right? She seemed to be a magnet for cheating people. And despite the damage, she just continued to stay. She stayed in the relationship. She endured and put up with whatever they dished out. And she never left. She gave loyalty long beyond what loyalty was due. Her childhood revealed a longstanding pattern of abuse and abandonment. And her mom had had multiple partners, many marriages throughout her lifetime, and chaos, disruption, and dysfunction were just as common as the sun rising every single morning. It was a steadfast nature, chaos and destruction. No one knew the meaning of stability or consistency in her family. Things changed in huge ways from day to day. Someone lived there, someone moved out, another person moved in. And came and went quickly. And Sally learned to adapt herself accordingly, to pick up the pieces of her mom's once again devastated world. She had become a parent to her mom even before she could tie her shoes, her earliest memories, and felt responsible for her mom's emotional needs and picking up the pieces. She had absolutely no sense of self. She was anxious and totally overwhelmed and simply couldn't handle any type of disagreement or conflict. And so she just put up with stuff. She did everything in her might to please and appease. And so you can kind of see the difference. There's Larry and there's Sally. And let's talk about Marcia. She's a little bit more right in the middle. Not right or wrong. I'm just trying to give you a scale of observation. Marcia was happy. And on the outside, she was very lovely and pleasant and polite. And yet, close up, what I saw was a whole level of bitterness and resentment that was beginning to seethe from her. Years of committee work, late nights working on the kids' homework that they didn't remember to do, sending all those birthday cards and the gift cards to people who never even uttered a word of thanks, making sure people had meals and they were very well taken care of when they were down and out. Suddenly, Marcia had it. She barely had the energy to get out of bed, and she seemed to enjoy absolutely nothing anymore. And sadly, even revealed to me that she sometimes had visions of driving her car into a tree. You know, obviously some concern. Her doctor warned her that this happens to women of her age, right? That this was, you know, could very likely be linked to menopausal issues. And I have to tell you, that is not what I saw in Marcia. Maybe that was a relevant factor to some degree, but what I saw from Marcia is that she had spent decades of her entire life spending taking care of people. Her mom had died when she was just 7, and her very distraught dad just got up and went to work every day. I mean, of course, he was trying to take care of the family that had been left behind. But naturally, he wanted to unwind after all those hard nights, right, or hard days at work, and just would sit down. And Marcia learned to kick in and take care. She was the one cooking, and she was the one washing the dishes and even making sure the kids were taken care of and that his coffee was made for the morning. She always did the right thing, often to her own detriment. She was exhausted and depleted, totally fed up. And long into adulthood, she was way over functioning and doing too many things for too many people. Depressed may have been what some people would have diagnosed her as, menopause, all of these different types of things. And yet I quickly recognized the diagnosis that was quite professional in my mind, to fed upness, right? Kind of this diagnosis that I talk about and misunderstood. Fed upness is exactly what I diagnosed her as. The saddest part is that she never even recognized that so many of these behaviors were completely self-induced. Each of these clients kind of getting in their own way and not knowing how to do things any differently. Before we take a break, I want to introduce you to one last client who actually was a ton of fun to work with once. I want to introduce you to Marty, and I actually very affectionately refer to him as Mean Marty, because he actually would say that about himself, just how mean he was. He had these heavy, thick boots that, you know, you could almost hear him coming down the hallway and up and down the stairs. He had a gun firmly strapped to his hip. You know, it's like, Marty had a presence and he was very suspicious. He wanted to know what I was writing, who I was telling, and all this kind of stuff. Marty trusted absolutely no one, and he believed in getting other people before they could get to him. Fighting, getting fired, road rage, breakups, those were all things that landed Mean Marty right on my office couch, because he knew that the road was not going to be a good one if he continued. He was defensive, angry, and definitely very mean. He had so much displaced anger and had this hairline trigger. And underneath that anger, actually, I could just detect a ton of fear and uncertainty, as it took him probably more sessions to reveal his childhood than I think it's ever taken anyone to. He revealed a neighborhood and school system that was really rough, very dangerous, but quite frankly, not nearly as dangerous as his home that he had grown up in. He had seen more violence by the time he was 11 years old than most people would ever care to see in their entire lifetime. Police often were at his house. He was even taken from his parents' care, punching, shouting, throwing things, you name it. It happened in Marty's household. His father would leave for days and food was often scarce. Clothes were dirty and electricity was sometimes a luxury that the family sometimes could not even afford. And quite frankly, no wonder he was so mean. I probably would be mean too. We need to take a break, but when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to the topic. What is it that unites these amazing folks to help you see a dynamic that often goes completely unrecognized and missed, even in my field where we are trained to know about these things? You're listening to The Allie Effect, authentically living life your way with me, Allison Blythe. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
get empowered. Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Amber, your weekly host of the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us and our global community of over 1 million strong on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. For more information, visit www.suivera.org. We look forward to seeing you in the Suivera community.
We're back here on The Ally Effect, authentically living life your way with me, Allison Blythe, certified life coach and licensed clinical social worker. Before we continue and get too far down the road, I want to make sure you know how to be in touch with me. If you ever want to leave me a message, please contact my landline, 859-341-7773. If you want to check out my website to kind of see what I'm all about and some of the services and programs I offer, AllisonBlythe.com. And email has a very trusted way to be in touch with me, AllisonBlythe@live.com. And social media, trying to kind of have a presence there to just deposit some positivity into this world. Any social media platform, Allison Blythe, Life Coach. So today I want to shine some light on a topic that's rarely discussed. And if it is, there's not a lot of accuracy, understanding, or certainly compassion around this specific topic. But before the break, I introduced you to four of my clients. I introduced you to Larry, Sally, Marsha, and even Mean Marty, you know, again, to see their range of behavior, all very different backgrounds and circumstances that they grew up with. There's one more person I want to add to this mix before we move into the topic. I want to introduce you to Ellen. A beautiful woman, highly successful, very well educated, very eloquent in her speech and in her demeanor. She was well traveled and had met influencers of every stature. She was an athlete and an achiever by all rights, and she was professional, very well accomplished, and perhaps even perfect might be a word that I think I would associate she was striving for. Her personal relationships, however, remember, hard to hate close up. She dated amazing men, right? She never had a hard time attracting kind, attentive, equally wealthy, educated, and traveled and accomplished men. But she had been divorced once. She had dated often and simply could not and would not commit to anyone. It left her questioning. And honestly, some of her family and friends left her questioning, like, is there something wrong with me? Ellen's family history revealed huge amounts of money, right? And these money secrets actually were distorted Ellen's level of history because it taught her well how to perform. So this family appearance of money and wealth and travel and stature all kind of created these generational messages that kept Ellen very well accomplished, very well traveled, lots of experiences, and yet completely unnurtured, not cared for, with any sense of importance, any kind of attention, or certainly no sense of mattering to anyone. And as amazing as her outer life appeared, she was completely a shell who didn't know how to commit. She didn't know how to let people in or see who she really was. Vulnerability was not even an option for her. She had just broken up with another real Prince Charming, like really a good guy. And her friends accused her of being crazy for leaving yet another man. Ellen desperately wanted to know what was wrong with her and why she could not possibly commit. So there you go. Five folks, all seeking my services, all presenting in the world completely different and different backgrounds and life circumstances, and yet in so much pain and turmoil. Today, as we address this topic, it is a topic of a disease, and it is a disease that actually impacts an estimated 26.8 million. I actually had to practice that number, 26.8 million Americans, just Americans. This is a disease that destroys more families than we could ever measure. And it's one of the only diseases that makes family members as sick, if not sicker, than the one who actually has it. So what in the world am I talking about? What's this disease? This is, sends off my spidey senses that I can kind of detect. My friends, today we're actually talking about the family disease of alcoholism. No matter what your understanding is of the disease model of addiction, that is not my focus. I don't want to argue disease of choice, disease of the body. I don't want to discuss that. I actually want to talk about the impact that drinking has on family members and why it is so destructive. And though many people have probably heard of the term codependency, I mean, most people kind of, we all know that term. Most people aren't necessarily familiar with the term COA or ACOA, COA being children of alcoholics and ACOA being adult children of alcoholics. I wonder, is that anything that you understand? Is that anything that you've ever been exposed to? Again, 26.8 million Americans who are addressing this issue or affected by this issue, not necessarily addressing. It's something that people often land in my office for, but unless you know what you're looking at, can be tremendously misunderstood and misdiagnosed. Often it presents itself kind of in a sideways fashion. Think about the people I just introduced you to. Things like anxiety, rigidity, relationship problems, depression, abuse, communication or trust issues, affairs, like all different kinds of stuff. It does manifest itself all over the place and can be really hard to know what you're looking at clinically. I have seen people who have spent years of their lives struggling with this specific issue being at the root, seeing doctor after doctor, trying medication after medication, and seeking so many external solutions without ever really understanding what the issue is that's actually affecting them. Today, I want to talk to you about the family disease of alcoholism, more specifically, how growing up in addiction, and it doesn't have to just be alcoholism, it can be any level of addiction, actually influences and shapes you in ways that you likely have never even known or recognized. Because I have personally been touched by several people's struggles with addiction. I am very, very passionate about this topic. And I have been an active member of recovery for more than 16 years. And it's such an honor to be a part of a community. We'll talk a little bit about that later. My mission is to educate, equip, and empower. And today I want to do that to the best of my ability when it comes to this issue. I want to shine some light on a very hidden, confusing dynamic that most people, even professionals, don't recognize. ACOA comes with its own personality, so to speak, its own symptoms and dynamics that we'll talk about. And to gain an understanding for and compassion for how you may have been affected by someone else's drinking and not even realize the severity of it. There is a lot of confusion about this. And one of the main reasons is because the face of addiction looks incredibly incredibly different from person to person. I want you to think about the different stories that I shared. People like Larry or Ellen's family, they're all highly functional, educated, even wealthy and religious. Yet the people in Sally's family or even Mean Marty's family, not so much. There's substantial stereotype and even ignorance about what alcoholism itself looks like. Alcoholism, heavy drinking often goes undetected because it doesn't look like the stereotypical version of maybe what someone might call like real alcoholism. If it's not homeless under a bridge or people getting 7 DUIs, then it's easy to minimize. It's not that big of a deal. Maybe there's someone that you know that's as severe as homeless under a bridge. They can't keep a job. They can't feed their kids. They can't be loyal to their partner. But it doesn't have to be that severe or that dysfunctional to actually impact the way that a family is designed with that. So often know that it takes one person who has a problem with drinking to affect multiple layers of people. And this dynamic is often missed, undetected, and even misrepresented because many people, professionals included, believe and buy into this homeless under a bridge perspective. And so it's easy to justify or minimize. I hear things all the time like, well, they didn't drink every day, or she could stop anytime that she wanted to, or he went to work every day. You know, again, those stereotypical beliefs, something like they were never arrested, or if there was no abuse or physical violence, sometimes it is missed. And then one of the classic ones that I hear, again, both personally and professionally, but she's such a good person, as though addiction only happens to bad people. The exact opposite is true. Addiction can happen to any type of person. It's a toxic, progressive disease that does incredible damage to the mind, to the heart, and definitely to the spirit, to those people who are affected by it. And it has absolutely nothing to do with character, kindness, wealth, education, or the worth of the specific person. It does take a toll, and there's a family dynamic for the problem drinker. And even if they didn't drink every time, even if they are a really, really good person. So today, as we talk about this dynamic, ACOA, adult children of alcoholics, I want to help you determine if this is something you were impacted by, to see how you may have been shaped and influenced by it, and to see what you can possibly do about it. Maybe this is the first time you're hearing this dynamic. This information is new to you, or maybe it's the first time you're realizing, like, oh, maybe there is something to this that I'm not sure about. Or maybe you're not sure at all. Maybe this is just the first time you're being introduced. I would encourage you to listen with an open mind and an open heart. This is a show that is not designed to argue the disease mentality, the disease model, or to judge or assess someone else's drinking for us to determine whether or not he or she has a problem with addiction. This is really about your ability to assess if you've been affected by it. This is for you to see if you've been influenced by one of the deadliest diseases that has wreaked havoc on families for decades in ways that often go completely unrecognized. When people enter my office, I can often tell when there is an issue or problem with alcohol. And typically, I can actually detect it from the person who is not the problem drinker. I can spot the dysfunction very, very quickly. And they are the ones who are doing and fixing, managing, monitoring, trying to keep everything above water. They are the ones who are working hard, trying to be good, trying to be helpful, keep it together by being pleasers or performers, trying to keep things perfect. The ones who are uptight, very controlling and rigid. Maybe they are the ones who are judging and scrutinizing. Because they are the ones trying to keep it together, they often show way more of the symptoms. They're focused on the survival and keeping things above water. The burden of managing, mothering, monitoring, martyrdom, the M's that we talk about, is just exhausting. It's totally overwhelming and depleting. Talk about fed upness, that sometimes it's just too much for people, and their symptoms become very evident. There is no reward in any of those types of behaviors, and it's completely unsustainable. And honestly, it's not very effective. Yet many people are caught in this trap because they have no idea what's happening or how to do anything differently. When we come back, I want to introduce you to more dynamics and characteristics of ACOA. Again, to help you determine more clearly if it's something that's relevant to you and to see what extent you've been shaped by it. Come back with an open mind and see if this information can help you. So I am Allison Blythe, and you're listening to The Allie Effect, authentically living life your way. We'll be right back. Hey. Okay. How long was that one? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah, we're back here on The Allie Effect, authentically living life your way. I'm Allison Blythe, certified life coach and licensed clinical social worker. Today, we are talking about authentically living life your way, and actually maybe a hard life reality that may be relevant for you. It might be relevant for someone that you love dearly, and you still might not be buying in whether this is relevant to you or not. We're addressing something called ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics. And before you jump to any strict conclusions or stereotypes about the relevancy of this topic for you, I'll encourage you to take a listen. And this is actually far more common than most people would ever imagine. These dynamics can be evident in generations. Maybe you're not affected directly by alcoholism, but maybe your parents were. These generational behaviors, belief systems, patterns, all of it can just be passed down as the way people relate in the world. So ACOA, what's the big deal? What's the big deal if someone in the family drank a little bit too much? Doesn't everybody tie one on once in a while? I think alcohol use and impact is so easy to minimize, and it's so easy to justify. I want you to think about this. Drinking is one of the only destructive behaviors we feel the need in our society to explain or justify why we're not doing. Okay, again, think about that. You meet someone new and their first response is, hey, would you like to get a drink sometime? Or you go to a party and someone says, hey, what are you drinking? And you decline and suddenly like people are like, well, what's wrong? Why not? Suddenly you're the party pooper or the buzzkill or the prude, right? Like, isn't that peculiar? Like if you really think about it through that lens, can you imagine getting crap from someone for not smoking? Like most of us go like, oh, that's not really, that's a pretty destructive behavior. And there's a normalcy about not doing really other destructive things. Alcohol? Absolutely not. People don't harass you and ask what's wrong if you're not lighting up. They are doing some other type of destructive behavior. They don't tend to ridicule you, make fun of you, talk about you behind your back or to your face, or shame you for not partaking in those behaviors. Alcohol is a very different ballgame. Non-drinkers are often harassed and made fun of for not joining in the festivities. It's such a messed up dynamic in our world, and yet a real one nonetheless. And so alcohol use is so common and it's so acceptable, even encouraged and rewarded. There's a tolerance and a permission and a generalized support for actually drinking socially, culturally, in a lot of families, and even some careers. It's really a normal dynamic, and yet it's totally toxic and unhealthy. So if a loved one has any type of issue, it can easily be overlooked and excused, especially if it doesn't look like that homeless under a bridge. There is so much normalcy and permission around the alcohol use that if you suddenly start to put these pieces together or you have a problem with the drinking, you actually may be viewed as the problem, someone who is overreacting or overly dramatic. So if alcohol use is so prevalent and normalized in our world and most people are doing it, why is it such a big deal? How much harm can it actually do to someone? I want you to just think about the basics. If we've ever been around someone who has been drinking or is actually drunk, we all know alcohol alters somebody's state. Your defenses and your inhibitions are down. Emotions, reactions, decision-making, they're all altered. Things like coping skills, communication or conversational skills, they're almost like non-existent. You know, again, if you ever try to carry on a conversation with a drunk person, try having dinner with them nightly, try to get your homework papers assigned or making sure your clothes are folded. Seeing a parent one time drunk, you know, it can be impactful. If there wasn't a trauma associated with it, it's probably not that big of a deal. But I will have people come in and talk about a time or two that they actually saw their parent intoxicated. Sometimes there's laughter and sometimes there's not. Sometimes it can really affect somebody. But if this becomes more of a normal pattern, you see this on a fairly consistent basis, it becomes a much bigger deal and can be completely life-defining. And I want to explain this to help paint the picture. So for simplicity's sake, if you've taken any of my needs course, you know that there are both physical and emotional needs. There are a ton of needs, but just for simplicity's sake today, I want you to think about physical needs, things like food, shelter, water, clothing, affection. Think about somebody like Mean Marty and the realization that the basics of electricity was something that he couldn't assume would be there day to day, night, coming home from school. So along with that went things like hot water, even food or a place to lay his head. I said to you the first time, no wonder he was mean. And I honestly think I would probably be mean too. It was survival of the fittest in his home. These are basic needs that ensure stability, predictability, safety, trust, and assurance. If you don't know that there's going to be food or you're going to be able to take a bath before you go to school, kids need food, safety, clothes, shelter. I mean, it's a little bit of common sense, but they also need them consistently with ease and reliability. Anything that fractures these needs being met consistently will totally fracture your sense of safety in the world and trust in life, trust in others. If physical needs can even be things like a consistent ride home, that you don't wonder, like, are they going to show up? Or are they not going to show up? Clean clothes, you know, having things that you can actually get dressed in the morning, and after school snacks being in the cupboard so that you don't have to be starving during the night. Things like shame, embarrassment, and insecurity get planted into children at a very early age when these are their circumstances. So then you want to think about things like growth or learning, social development, playing on a team. That can't happen if a child's basic needs aren't met. So physical needs must be met for not only this core level of survival that a kid's going to be able to live day after day, but also their growth, their learning, and their well-being. And here's another critical piece, that just like homeless under the bridge perspective of alcoholism, if a child does grow up with their physical needs being met, the harm may not be as detectable. We would be able to witness maybe a home of filth or no food, a child who is not bathed. And let's switch gears and say that all of their physical needs are met and bruises aren't detected and things like that. It leaves us with this category of emotional needs that are so incredibly important in shaping a child's SOS, sense of self. Emotional needs for all human beings at a young age and even at an old age: attention, trust, reliability, to be seen, to matter, right? Those are just core basic emotional needs. Think about Ellen, and she always had plenty. She had plenty of things. She had plenty of opportunities. She had taken more vacations than probably anyone. Plenty of household help to help cater to all of her physical needs. She was never without in a physical capacity. And yet she was completely a shell. No one ever paid attention to her. She was only valued for the ways that she supported her family's appearance and social status. All of those awards that hung on the wall, the trophies she could display, and even that valedictorian status. And yet no one helped her come to celebrate. She had every physical and worldly opportunity at her fingertips, and no one cared. They did not pay attention to the artwork that she loved to do. It actually got some eye rolls from her family. Nobody attended the gallery event where her work was displayed. Dried her tears when she overheard her best friends talking about her in the locker room. No one certainly helped her pick out her homecoming dress, but they certainly did scrutinize the way that she looked that night. And one of the saddest elements is that no one knew that homecoming king that she was so incredibly excited to have a date with actually stole her innocence without her consent. You see, she faced life alone. Nobody paid attention. Nobody knew what was happening in her world or really even cared, as long as she kept up the appearance and was performing well and doing exactly what was expected of her. Emotional needs help you grow roots, right? Having your emotional needs consistently, they provide substance and grit, kind of the sense of worth in the world. I imagine like a tree, and that as it grows, it kind of the roots become established. And if that doesn't happen, if someone isn't pouring into and nurturing you in some way, it's like that first storm comes and just knocks you to the ground. Kids need to be seen. They need to be valued and protected. They do not need to always get their way, but they do need to feel like they matter and that they're heard. Things like structure, reliability, and consistency, these are all things that kids will fight and they will resist. They'll get so mad about when you try to implement, and yet they need them desperately. Kids growing up, kind of some of the family stuff, like we talked about with some of the clients, when things were just so unpredictable and volatile in so many ways, not knowing if things were going to be okay that night, that morning. Things like connection, belonging, being a part of something, right? It's like what we call family, all provide a foundation and a footing for kids to really just launch into the world, to have some kind of sense of who they are and what they're capable of. knowing that someone's going to invest in there, to be there consistently, even if they don't go to the practice, they're there to, you know, get you in the car and get you back home, to have your back. It provides a sense of worth, personal value, and esteem. The world can be very big and scary, even as an adult. I mean, we all face times like, the world. But when you face that alone as a child, or your needs aren't consistently met, alcoholism doesn't allow someone, even if it's periodic alcohol, the dynamics are so distorted. Any kind of problematic substance use is filled with things like unpredictability, uncertainty, disappointment, and confusion. Examples that many clients have shared with me, like a client, a parent who misses practice and you have to find your own way home. We already used that example. You learn not to trust or rely on anyone, this fierce level of independence and strength you promised, or maybe just to feed and not even trying, a promised holiday adventure that's suddenly disrupted by absence, arguing, or some type of violence. It'll cause dread and this fear. When good things start to happen, you actually become more terrified because you're just convinced that the shoe's going to drop. It creates this heightened sense of disappointment that even some of the smallest things are going to lead to deeper devastation. A parent who just acts weird when your friends are around, and so you stop inviting them, instilling a sense of like being different from others, isolated and unworthy, right? Watching a parent pour a third drink and then having to get in the car with them to get to practice, to get home from the restaurant. Like, you've just learned about the dangers of drinking and driving, and yet you have to learn how to get, how to subside, how to push all that, to suppress all of that stuff, so that you can listen and actually go through the process of just getting yourself home. Maybe you learn to deny your own personal truth or listening to voices outside of yourself, and you loathe authority for their hypocritical ways. Sally was a good example of this. Despite obvious behaviors of things that were going on, relationship problems, she was in chronic denial and continued to stay in things that were so harmful for her. Maybe the opposite is true. You've learned to be funny and lighthearted, keep things on the surface. Remember Larry, who talked about things were fine, or Marsha was a classic example, trying to be helpful and lighthearted, always doing for others. Maybe you wear a mask so that you can show people more of what they want to see, so that people will like you and they don't ever dig too deeply into who you are. Larry really did learn to live life on the surface and just to claim that everything was fine. And yet his wife was wanting to file for divorce. No one ever talked about problems in his family. He didn't know how to magically do that as an adult. He didn't know how to tap into those emotions. Marty didn't know how to feel safe in the world just because he magically turned 18 and had a woman who was interested in him, right? These dynamics become woven into the fabric of who we are and how we show up in the world. These matter. This can feel like some pretty heavy stuff. We do need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to offer you some hope. It can be a dark topic, and I want to ensure you that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. You're not alone, and there is information and support available. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Excuse me, did you say Sanskrit? Yes, absolutely. Sanskrit is the language of the universe. The word Sanskrita means pure and perfectly formed. When we're still, open and receptive, we may hear a still small voice within. We feel a simple resonance with this universal language, and we just know that the voice is true. That inner voice speaks to us in a language that is always pure and perfectly formed. It's Sanskrita that speaks to us out of the silence. Sanskrit is also the name of a language that is found in dictionaries and great works of profound wisdom. It's the closest reflection of that perfect universal language. Study of this powerful language can lead us to an understanding of that perfect inner voice. Join me, Sarah Main, on Damayanti, the show for your soul, where we discover this true inner voice of the soul together. And check out my website, damayanti.store.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're We're back on the Ally Effect, authentically living life your way with me, Allison Blythe, certified life coach and licensed clinical social worker. We're discussing a topic today that certainly may be a heavy one. Maybe it's something that you've never really considered or known to be true for yourself. Maybe your eyes are open for the very first time in ways that you never saw coming. It can be a lot to digest, and it's okay if your head's spinning and you're not really sure what to think. It's okay, and it's normally part of the process as people begin to see it through a different lens. There's some dynamics that are important to understand that maybe will help you relate and assess whether or not this issue is really relevant for you. ACOA, adult children of alcoholics, can have long-standing problems in the way that they show up in the world, the way that they think and respond to things, to stressors, and even in relationships, and certainly even in parenting. Maybe you don't have a sense of self, so you've learned to chameleon yourself to fit into what other people want from you and what you expect. You've spent years of your life just trying to go along to get along, people-pleasing, and doing what's expected of you. Maybe you quickly get sucked into things that aren't good for you and wonder once again, like, how did I get here? Why do I keep doing this? It is not uncommon. This is actually far more common than people would think. It's not uncommon for someone who's grown up in some type of addiction to actually partner with someone who is an addict of some sort. Maybe it's alcohol, drugs, work, gambling, sex. It's incredibly common because adult children of alcoholics are great helpers. They're amazing people who tend to be fixers and managers, and they will invest in the potential that someone shows more than they will actually see the reality of that person. So often adult children of alcoholics are connecting with someone who like needs their services, so to speak, right? Except they're not getting paid for it. Things like denial, anger, poor decision-making, poor coping mechanism, showing up like dysfunctional in relationships. These are all really commonplace. Remember, I said we don't magically turn 18 and know how to incorporate typical life experiences. Remember now, this is why they call it a family disease. These are all people who haven't picked up the drink, right? I'm not saying that they never drank, but these are not the people affected that are actually drinking the alcohol, right? So this is why it's a family disease. I do want to offer hope. I don't want to just leave you. My mission is to educate, equip, and empower. I want to offer tools, tips, and resources. And I mentioned the 12 steps of recovery. And one of the things right out of the gate, if someone is even wondering curiously, like, wait a minute, is this some of what might be going on in my life? There are specific programs, Al-Anon, CODA, which stands for Codependence Anonymous, or actual ACOA groups. And if you've never heard of these, maybe you don't have any concept of what they are. They're actually 12-step programs, each with the intention to help people cope and heal from another person's dysfunctional drinking. Now, CODA has more dynamics associated with codependency. There can or doesn't have to be issues with alcohol or drugs, but nonetheless, they're all 12-step programs that will help you learn how to focus on yourself, establish boundaries, learn how to detach, recognize that there's choices. Sometimes even if there's some of the hardest choices you ever faced, you still have choices. Work on your coping mechanisms and help you understand further the dynamics of addiction, the fact that you didn't cause it, you can't cure it, and you can't control it. These meetings allow you a safe, totally confidential place to sit with people who really just, quite frankly, just get it. They have been through some of the same things you've been through, thought some of the same thoughts, and certainly felt some of the exact same feelings. And one of the best parts is that there's no musts. There's no have-tos in any of these programs. There's no rules, and nobody's going to tell you what to do or what not to do. It's just people coming together, like-minded, like problems in the world. They will listen, support, and share their experience, strength, and hope. There's community, safety, and sharing. I will encourage you that if you even wonder slightly about this topic, I will encourage you to check this out. You don't have to commit, right? You don't have to sign on any dotted line. Nobody's going to take down your address and come find you if you don't come back. It's an anonymous program. And so the idea that your privacy is just protected when you go, it's just intended to be a safe place. I would encourage you to give it a try. You might be very pleasantly surprised. The groups have been around for a very long time and have proven to be highly effective in helping support people in every walk of this journey. If group doesn't quite feel right, maybe you're not too sure and you're not ready to bite that off, I would encourage you to maybe do a little one-on-one work. Seek out a therapist and a trained professional. I will make one caveat, and I really want to emphasize this part. Remember I said how easy it is for ACOA or codependent dynamics to be missed. Make sure you see someone who has experience with addiction, and not just the addiction mentality, but also understands the family dynamics that go along with it too. We've started to see why that's so important. Special training is really necessary. We've already gone over the number of ways why how this pattern shows up. And so seeing someone who knows what they're looking at will make all the difference for you and really help you get the help and healing you deserve. So maybe you're still uncertain. You're like, I'm just trying to listen to something, right? And so maybe you're not ready for a group. Maybe you're not ready for some of the individual stuff. Maybe you need a smaller dose that would be helpful for you. And that's actually the huge part of why I do the work that I do. I want you to be able to take this at your own pace and have tools and resources so that you can have them readily at your fingertips when you're ready. If you're wondering about all of this stuff and still trying to decide if it's relevant for you, check out some of the past episodes, right? Any of the tools that we're learning about is going to help a very typical person. But if you've had any type of ACOA questioning, past episodes, the book Misunderstood that I wrote, all of these teaching about boundaries, how you're spending your commodities, time, energy, and effort, and building that classic sense of self. Online courses, if that is more manageable for you and you don't want to commit to something on a consistent basis with maybe a group or therapy, you do not need to do this work alone. And you definitely do not need to do it the hard way anymore. I want to offer you some tools. Maybe today is all you can handle. And so if that's the case, if you've listened to any of my previous episodes, you know the one tool I'm going to hand you time and time and time again is self-awareness. Maybe today you've learned something new and your eyes are wide open and you're able to understand yourself in a very different way. Awareness is always a starting point of what you're feeling, what's going on inside of you and what's going on around you and why you're doing what you're doing. Self-awareness will help you pay attention and tune in so that you can start to recognize different types of engagements that you have with people. And a second tool that I think is incredibly important, remember, all these behaviors tend to come out sideways and they are often misunderstood and misdiagnosed. The tool that I would offer in this case is self-compassion. Growing up is hard, like period. Just raising into an adult, it's hard. It's hard for parents. It's hard for kids. And some people certainly have an easier go at it than others. But if you were raised in any type of challenging childhood, it will shape and affect, alter the way that you walk through life. Facing challenges in your home, at the core of your own family, will definitely alter your course. Self-compassion just softens the lens. It's a little bit more tender. It just allows you to have a certain level of understanding and tenderness about why you do the things you do. And once you meet yourself with self-awareness and self-compassion, you can actually step into the next tool, which I refer to as self-responsibility. If you've not checked out Mark Manson's work, I think it's him who says this. He just quite frankly says, there are people who are totally to blame for things that they did to you, especially if you were young, right? Like if somebody steals from you or somebody harms you, like they are totally responsible for that. However, the issue becomes that the problem may have their name written all over it, but the solution actually is where self-responsibility comes in. The solution is actually up to you to find ways to change and heal your life. It's all up to you. Maybe you did start with a very crappy hand, but the cards you play later in life are totally up to you. So if you don't know where to begin, consider one of the resources I told you about today. Maybe it's a meeting. Maybe it's a trained therapist. Maybe it's the SOS toolbox. All of those episodes are there. You've got some options and you don't have to do it alone. And you do not have to do it the hard way. If you're finding that some of this ACOA stuff is relevant to you, do your homework, really start to practice and get some understanding of what this dynamic is and how you can proceed with helping yourself authentically live life your way. If you want to contact me, you know how to do that. AllisonBlythe.com, AllisonBlythe@live.com, or send me a message at 859-341-7773. I really want to thank you for tuning in today, to taking the time to listen, authentically living life your way. I always have a wonderful time and I'm deeply grateful that you take the time and the energy to spend with me. This is a show about authenticity, and it sometimes requires you to dig deep and have some hard conversations, some hard awareness, and definitely some hard choices. I do hope you feel educated, equipped, and empowered as you authentically live life your way. Join me next time on The Allie Effect, where we'll talk even more about authenticity to help you feel inspired to find your path. Have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in to The Allie Effect with Allison Blythe. The moment you decide to take control of your own well-being, you start the journey of authenticity. Tune in next time for more empowering conversations and practical tools to help you shed your fear, worry, comparison, and less than beliefs. Stick with us as you step into the driver's seat and head off onto the road of success and happiness. Your best life awaits.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.